Okay. Mr. De La O?
May it please the Court. My name is Miguel De La O, and I represent the plaintiffs who, the appellants who were the plaintiffs below. The trial court erred in dismissing my client's Fourth Amendment complaint on the defendant's affirmative defense of statute of limitations. It was, in fact, inappropriate to grant a motion to dismiss based on the pleadings in this case, because the pleadings very specifically first alleged that there had been alterations to the roadways, the sidewalks, and the curb cuts in Arlington within 2 years, within the preceding 2 years, and that was paragraph 13 of the Fourth Amendment complaint. More importantly, throughout the complaint, it said that.
Let me ask you just a minute on that.
Sure.
If it's the language I'm thinking of, is it the same phrase, these projects were performed either within the last 2 years or after 1992. Is there different phrasing somewhere, or is that what you're talking about?
No, that is what I'm referring to. It was talking about some specific streets.
Okay, but doesn't that leave it open? You're not affirmatively saying it was done within the last 2 years. You said, well, I mean, it's not the way you put it, but I think a reasonable interpretation of that is within the last 2 years or at least since 1992.
I believe the what we were trying to convey is it had been done within 2 years, or put another way, since 1992. It's very critical that any changes have been after the law was passed.
But obviously anything after within the last 2 years would have been after 1992. So
it was redundant.
You take this to be, well, maybe redundant or in the alternative. But nonetheless, what you're saying here is you're trying to plead that some of this work was done within 2 years prior to the complaint.
Correct.
All right.
I think that's where it's the clearest in the Fourth Amendment complaint. But throughout, on other streets where our expert simply could not narrow it down without discovery as to when the alterations occurred, it said, and we were very specific, they were either within 3 years, not at more than 3 years, which is what the appellees continue to accuse us of having pled. That is not what it said. And the court said the same thing. It said that we had admitted all these changes occurred more than 3 years ago. That is not true. It pleads that it occurred within the preceding 3 years, but our expert could not, without discovery, say specifically how soon within 3 years. So once we plead, it has occurred within 3 years, it has occurred within 5 years, the burden, because it is an affirmative defense, falls on Arlington. And this is a motion to dismiss. We are still at the pleading stage. It is not obvious on the face of the complaint that the statute of limitations, assuming we lose every other argument in this appeal, it is not obvious on the face that the statute of limitations has not been met. And therefore, on this basis alone, the court should not have dismissed our complaint. I want to, obviously, because I'm not always confident I'm going to win every argument, but I want to address the other arguments, because if this court remands it, as I hope it does, I believe the trial court needs some guidance when the inevitable motion for summary judgment comes as to what is the proper applicability of a statute of limitations under Title II. Let me first make one observation. There have been approximately, exactly, five cases cited between appellants and appellees dealing with Title II, three of them dealing specifically with sidewalks and curb cuts. None of those cases upheld a statute of limitations defense. Now, there's a morass here. They all use different bases for not throwing out the plaintiff's claims on a statute of limitations. For example, VFI, which is Voices for Independence, rejected the application of the continuing violation theory, but they said that injunctive relief cannot be barred by the statute of limitations because the injury is still occurring. DIA, which is the case that Arlington has just submitted in their supplemental memo, rejected the use of the discovery rule and based it instead on the wording of Title II public facilities language. The DEC case says, no, you should use the discovery rule, but they all reach the exact same conclusion. We are not going to bar these claims on a statute of limitations basis. Why? Primarily because the injury is still occurring. Because no matter how you cut it, there is no other civil right in this country, there is no other suspect class that would be subjected to the radical theory that has been put forward by Arlington. Under Arlington's theory, if a business decides to implement a policy that any woman that gets pregnant will be fired on the spot, but no woman gets pregnant within 2 years, or women who do get pregnant and get fired don't sue, when another woman gets pregnant 5 years down the road, Arlington says, sorry, we've had this policy for 5 years, you are barred. It is limitation by association. It is because you share some of the same characteristics as someone else who could have brought a lawsuit, you are barred.
Counsel, you referred to previous federal court's efforts in this area as a morass, and we certainly want to avoid adding one more such opinion. But the problem, I think, for the courts is there's the example you just gave, any example on a civil rights law is distinguishable, it seems to me, from this particular statute, which is a more concrete kind of violation by the actor who is being sued. And it's one thing to say the policy has existed for a long time to discriminate and it just affects an individual employee at some later time. It's something else to say a sidewalk has existed for 15 years that was built in violation of this act, and the statute of limitations doesn't begin until someone with who is adversely affected by that violation encounters it. So, I mean, there is no clearly comparable body of law that I think either side of you has cited. Why isn't this different?
If I could give another analogy, maybe this one will make it clear, I hope. The Ford Pinto. Ford makes the Pinto. The allegation is that it blows up upon rear impacts. I buy a Pinto, and I have it for 5 years. It never blows up on me. No one ever rear-ends me. But I see other people get rear-ended, and their car blows up. I do not have a cause of action until such time as I have suffered the injury. That is when someone hits my car and it blows up. And that is particularly instructive here because of the standing requirements under Lujan and all the other U.S. Supreme Court cases that say until you have a concrete injury under the ADA, you have actually suffered the injury and will continue to suffer it. You cannot bring a claim.
All right, let me ask you, getting away from the statute of limitations for a minute, what relief is available to you here?
Well, under the Rehab Act, Under the Rehab Act, we would have had access to damages, but we have waived that. The only relief sought by the Fourth Amended complaint is injunctive relief. We want them to fix the sidewalks that have been altered since 92.
Okay. Now, but yet you are seeking that under the transition plan, right?
No. We had raised two claims. We had said that they had violated the ADA by not having a transition plan. The law is very murky there. The circuits are very split on that. We have not appealed that.
But, I mean, it seems to me you're asking for injunctive relief for relief that is available only under a plan and under a regulation under which you have no private cause of action.
I have to disagree.
Well, I want you to explain.
Sure. We do not have a private cause of action for forcing Arlington to come up with a transition plan. The transition plan, what it does is it says, even if you haven't yet altered sidewalks, the DOJ has told the cities, you have to come up with a plan for fixing the sidewalks, right, even built before 92. You have to fix them all. Okay. And that's where the transition plan comes in. We are only suing for curb cuts that were not put in, sidewalks that were not fixed, when there were alterations to that road.
All right. Now, if you get an injunction, what is the effect of that? Does the court enforce the injunction and say to the city, go out and build them?
No. It says go out and fix the ones you should have fixed when you altered the roads.
So it says go out and fix the ones now. The court can order the city to engage in this expenditure.
Absolutely. The court's only ordering them to do what the Congress has told them they were supposed to do initially. Congress said if you build a sidewalk after 92 or if you alter an existing road after 92, do it this way.
Do you have any case in which a court has enjoined and required a city to build sidewalks under the circumstances of this case?
Well, I want to parse that because Arlington accuses us of trying to make them build sidewalks. We are not. No one has the authority to make a municipality build a sidewalk. But where they have built sidewalks since 92, they need to be built correctly. Where they have altered roads since 92, the sidewalks need to be built correctly and need to be retroactively fixed. And that's Barden out of the Ninth Circuit addresses that issue.
What does it say?
In Barden, it was Sacramento was sued because they had built a number of sidewalks and had altered a number of roads, hadn't done them right. Trial court said you have to fix them. Ninth Circuit said you have to fix them, and the court refused to accept certiorari. And the DOJ filed a friend of the brief and said you need to fix them because otherwise we're rewarding them.
But I mean, not you need to fix them, but you fix them.
Fix them. You must fix them. You must go back retroactively and do what you were supposed to have done right the first time. As long as it was built after 92. and only where a municipality chooses to build sidewalks. But if you're going to do them, you cannot discriminate against the disabled. And the DOJ filed a very strong friend of the court brief in Barton when it was up on a petition for certiorari. And that gets Chevron substantial deference.
Why is 1992 involved in this now?
I'm sorry, I missed
the point. Why is 1992?
That's the effective date of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Now back to the statute of limitations.
Sure.
Are you arguing then that it is open forever or into the future whenever a person who's disabled might run into that particular sidewalk and have problems?
Yes.
So it could be 20, 30 years down the road before somebody runs into this particular intersection where there's not a accommodation for a wheelchair.
Well, yes, but let's keep in mind that this is all within Arlington's power to fix it, to do it right from inception. The law has been on the books now. We're coming up 18 years. My math is very bad. 17 years. They know what their responsibilities are, and they're not building them right. So, it's like the person who kills their parents and then claims he's an orphan and deserves pity. They want pity because it's going to cost them money, but it would have cost them less if they would have done it right. And the Department of Justice has gone out of their way suing municipalities across this country. They are all well aware of what...
How do you have a private cause of action to force them to correct their sidewalks when you have no cause of action to make them build a sidewalk, and the result and the right to this access that we're talking about results from the transition regulations?
That's where I have to disagree. It does not result from the transition.
Did you have a right to this before the transition regulations to require cities to build, to cut curbs and so on?
To be honest, I believe they all came into being at the same time, but I haven't focused on that, so I don't know the dates. I don't know the chronology. But the point is that the reason for the transition plans is that the DOJ has said the cities need to fix even the sidewalks built before 92, and they should have a transition plan for bringing the entire city into compliance. That issue, whether private litigants have a private cause of action to force that transition plan, the courts are very much all over the place. So we drop that claim. But we are not trying to force them to fix the pre-92 sidewalks. The post-92 sidewalks, the Title II has created little attorney generals.
Authority do you have to do that?
By authority, you mean by case law?
Yeah. In other words, if you have no authority whatsoever to correct the sidewalks that were built before 1992, what authority do you have to correct the sidewalks that were built after 1992?
Title II gives my clients the authority to bring claims for injuries they have suffered as a result of violations of Title II. The transition regulations specifically appear to talk only about the Department of Justice.
But your clients would suffer the same lack of access to all sidewalks that had been built before 1992 as they do after 1992. It's the same injury, yet you can address the ones post-1992 and the one, but not the ones pre-1992, and that's what I don't understand.
And I don't necessarily like it. I think that obviously if we're going to have the right to, I think Your Honor is correct, if we have the right to enforce any of it, we should have the right to enforce all of it. But the circuits have really split on the transition plan, and I wanted to focus this court solely on the issue of the statute of limitations, and that's why we dropped the transition plan issue. But there is certainly authority that even private litigants have a right to enforce the transition plan requirement. Because we were thrown out on the statute of limitations, I wanted to focus the court solely on that issue. But
it just seems like you're coming around, the front door is closed to you, and you're coming around into the back door. Is that?
No, the front door being post-92 sidewalks has always been open to us. What some litigants have tried to do is open the door further and say, well, let us get all of the sidewalks, and some courts have said yes and others have said no to enforcing a transition plan. And I should note also,
in other words, the violation of the disabled person's rights are identical to the pre-1992 as the post-1992, but there's no remedy for the pre-1992. Is that what you're saying?
There's no private remedy, according to some courts, but the Attorney General, yes, can
force
it.
There is a private remedy with respect to the post-1992.
Correct.
And why is that?
Because Title II has given plaintiffs the right to enforce to seek injunctive relief for violations of Title II post-92.
Yeah, But post-92, but the violation still occurs. That runs contrary to your statute of limitations question, because it's the violation, the disabled person is just as injured in the pre as in the post. And you're saying...
In terms of policy, I agree with you. I think this is the distinction. The municipalities had no obligation before 92 to put in the curb cuts and make the sidewalks accessible. Post 92, they do. What the DOJ has said is they haven't even given them hard deadlines. They haven't said you have to fix them all within a year or 2 years. They've only said you need to come up with a plan. Make sure that you come up with a plan so that you eventually address all of them. And as long as they come up with a plan, then the Department of Justice leaves them alone.
Well, then how do you respond to the fact that you've suffered an injury just as much in all of your analogies to pregnant women and so on? Why is someone...
Sadly, some injuries go on.
And you can think about it. Maybe you can give me a clear answer.
Okay.
On rebuttal. Thank you.
If I could point out one other thing, that is... Oh, I'm sorry. My time is up. Thank you.
Well, I mean, if you want to point out one thing...
It was just that Arlington hasn't even said we don't have a right to bring this claim. They said we don't have the right to the transition plan, but not the Title II plan.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Wolf.
May it please the Court. My name is Ed Voss, and together with Denise Wilkerson, who's an assistant city attorney for the City of Arlington, I represent the defendant, City of Arlington, who's the appellee in this case. This Court should affirm the District Court's judgment because it correctly decided that the plaintiffs in this case failed to state a claim that accrued within the limitations period that was applicable in this case on their ADA claims and their Rehabilitation Act claims. I want to focus on the accrual issue because that's what they focused on in their appeal here, and I think that really ends up being the key issue that I've heard the judges this morning ask Mr. De La O about, and that is, when did the violation occur?
Let me ask you, not just on the when, but to be sure I understand the what. As I understand, what must be shown is that someone has suffered an act of discrimination by being excluded from participation in some service, program, or activity. In the briefs that the parties have submitted, there have been some case law that when you're looking at individual sidewalks, there is at least an issue of whether that's a service, program, or activity, whatever the operative language is. Does the city concede in this case that what the focus of the plaintiff's argument is at least subject to Title II?
The best way that I can answer that is a yes and no answer, Judge.
That's a great answer.
Because the problem with the program, service, or activity approach taken in this case by the plaintiffs is that it relies on the Barden case. And the Barden case is that Ninth Circuit case that says that anything a city does is a program, activity, or service. The problem with that argument is that it is inconsistent with the very regulations that the plaintiffs are seeking to impose on the City of Arlington in this case. It's inconsistent because those regulations define facility to be walkways and parking lots and those kind of facilities, and facility is defined here. Now, it's inconsistent in the sense that a facility is a way to attend or to get to a program, activity, or service. Under the Tennessee versus Lane Supreme Court case, the court talked there about what is a program, activity, or service. For example, going to vote, sitting on a jury, attending a program at a park. Even in one of the cases cited by Mr. De La O, the Parker versus University of Puerto Rico case, where a disabled individual was trying to get to a park, and as long as there was one accessible way to get there, the fact that some of the other facilities were wrong does not a Title II claim make. And so that's why I think there is a yes and no answer to that.
But what about a sidewalk in a residential neighborhood without a public library in the neighborhood or whatever else whatever is necessary to take out of the hypothetical to keep this from being the kind of activity that you say clearly is covered? Is that covered by the right to... For a handicapped person to claim a Title II violation, just a neighborhood sidewalk?
To answer that question, Judge, we need to get to the specifics. And the specifics are, as we submit in this case, whether or not there was a sidewalk that was constructed or altered within 2 years prior to when their claim was brought.
Okay, let's say that that exists. Would that neighborhood sidewalk be subject to this kind of claim?
Well, in that situation, it would be, Judge, but that isn't the case here. If you look at the plaintiff's...
Okay, but I'm trying to understand the what before you get to the when.
Okay.
And you're saying that it doesn't need to be a sidewalk, it doesn't need to be an absent ramp up from the street level to the sidewalk to get you to a public library or the county courthouse or whatever else. Just a neighborhood sidewalk's good enough.
It could be, Judge. And the actual requirement is to provide access to the program or activity or service. And if a sidewalk will do it, fine. If a paratransit bus will do it, that's fine. It has to be accessibility to the program, activity, or service. And that's the problem we have with the Barden case, because it opens up the floodgates and says that everything a city does is a program, activity, or service. The problem with that is that they haven't alleged that the entire program of sidewalks in the city of Arlington are a problem. Only specific locations don't comply with regulations. The problem with this case is they haven't alleged that the whole system of curb ramps around the city of Arlington are a problem. They've only alleged particular locations that they've alleged don't comply with the technical specifications. And so what we run into is, under the broader scope, is a failure to allege a cause of action generally. Now, the district court in this case did focus on the when.
I'm finished with the what. Why don't you move to the when?
Okay. And the focus on the when was there an allegation of harm, a discriminatory act that occurred within 2 years prior to the date that this case was filed? It was filed on July 22, 2005. Prior to the Fourth Amendment complaint, the district court asked a specific question in one of its prior orders. In one of those prior orders, it's on page 510 of the record, specifically asked for the plaintiffs to file an amended complaint that alleged dates or timelines of alteration and or construction for the sites allegedly that were noncompliant with the ADA or the Rehabilitation Act. And we still don't get that. We still don't have specific dates within 2 years, as alleged. Now, Judge Southwick's question did raise that, and did point out on page 4 of the plaintiff's complaint, there is that one statement that talks about, in general, and I submit that it's insufficient because it's conclusory, that says that there was some reconstruction or repavement either within the last 2 years or after 1992. I submit that's not specific enough. That did not comply with what the district court's order asked for them to do, and they still only alleged harm from a construction or alteration events, if any, that occurred 3, 5, 10 years, 12 years out. Now,
are you saying that's just the way you interpret that language? And I had the question for opposing counsel, but he says we should interpret that to mean at least some of this was done within the last 2 years. If he had said that more unobjectionably, more unquestionably, isn't that sufficient? And if we find he did actually say that, isn't that enough? I mean, this is just, you know, a motion to dismiss. Hasn't he made the allegation?
I submit that it's not sufficient, Your Honor, because what we're focusing on here is a discriminatory act. What is the discriminatory act that we're talking about? Under the plaintiff's allegations in this case, they are focusing on discriminatory acts being a noncompliant sidewalk, a noncompliant curb ramp. And under the regulations, you focus on when those occurred. When were those constructed? And that's what the cases are rely upon that I cited to the court, particularly the DIA, the Disabled in Action versus Southeast Pennsylvania Transportation case that I provided to the court in my Rule 28J letter this past Monday. The Third Circuit in that case looked at these regulations, and they wrestled with it. Now, the facts of that case are slightly different, as alleged, than they are here. In the DIA case, there was a 15th Street station being renovated in Philadelphia. And then the DIA folks realized, hey, the plans don't have any kind of elevators to get down. They're only talking about stairs and escalators. There's no elevator to make it accessible. And so they had discussions with the city. They had discussions with the Transportation Authority prior to that time. When the station was finally constructed, it still didn't have elevators or any other way for, as alleged in the case, for the disabled to get down to that station, to enter it from the 15th Street side or from the City Plaza side. Then the focus of the case became, well, the Transportation Authority asserted that the cause of action, using the very same rationale here, was when the disabled folks realized that there was going to be a non-accessible route, which was when the plans were being talked about, when they were being discussed, when the contracts were being let. The Transportation Authority was saying that the time began when the those facilities were actually constructed, and I think that rationale applies here. Now, it's applying in a different way, obviously, because in the district court case, DIA case, the district court said, well, your 2 years started to run when you knew about it, and that was more than, and so you filed suit more than 2 years after that, as opposed to when the construction was completed. And the Third Circuit found that the construction was completed on a later date, and the complaint was filed within 2 years of that. So therefore, it remanded the case and reversed it and sent it back down. But that case is interesting, too, because it provides some rationale that we don't have really any other place that I think helps us here, and particularly I'm looking at pages 216 and 217 of the court's opinion. In that case, they addressed an argument that was made that says, as DIA argues, it's easy to imagine a situation where an individual with a disability relocates to Philadelphia many years from now and attempts to use the 15th Street or City Hall courtyard for the first time. A court might fairly conclude that this individual, neither discovered nor having moved from some distant locale, should have discovered the inaccessibility of these stations until his arrival there. And then there's footnote 16. Footnote 16 says, although we do not decide this question, which in fairness, you know, it's not before them, it goes on to say, we would hesitate to apply the discovery rule in such a manner. And then it goes on in that footnote to talk about discovery rule is designed for latent injuries, for injuries such as in medical malpractice claims or products liability claims where they are not discoverable. But we're dealing here with concrete. And to borrow Judge Southwick's comment earlier today, he mentioned how we're talking about concrete violations, so to speak. And
I did not say so to speak, as I recall.
Okay. Well, I'm by analogy, I'm taking it to we're dealing with violations of concrete, in concrete. And the footnote here in the DIA, in the SEPTA case, says we find nothing latent about the injuries defined in 12147A because the fact that newly renovated subway stations do not include elevators should be readily apparent to any reasonably diligent potential plaintiff.
Counsel, let me ask you, though, I don't know if the Ford Pinto, was that it, whatever one with the gas tank, I don't know if that's the best analogy or not, and again, I think morass is probably a good label for some of the body or swamp of case law here, but I would think that when you're looking at an individual's injury, as Title II, I think, does, there are two perspectives, and we have them both represented here. One was the duty by the city violated, and you don't have to concede there was any duty by the city violated here, but that perhaps that is without question. And that is at the date that the renovations, that the projects were done post-92 and not done properly. But until you have a disabled person who has been injured, until a particular disabled person has been injured by that violation, that person wouldn't have any standing, would not have a cause of action. All the scenarios that court you just quoted, somebody just moving to a new city. This is very hard on the city, and I can certainly understand you fighting it, but it seems to me traditional idea of when a cause of action accrues for a particular individual is when that individual has been injured by an illegal action of someone else. Why isn't that the situation here?
Well, I understand if I understand the question, I think what we're dealing with in actuality are two different theories. This case was dismissed on the theory of that there was no accrual alleged of a discriminatory act. The cases that the plaintiffs are relying on are those that also talk about standing. We're not talking about standing here in the statute of limitations case, and I think that the voices for let's see, Voices for Independence case and the other cases cited by plaintiffs impermissibly mix those two concepts. Because to have standing, you've got to have injury. You've got to have causation. You've got to have a case that will remedy that. But we're not talking about standing in this particular instance. We're talking about a statute of limitations analysis. And under the statute of limitations analysis in the DIA case and in the other cases I've cited, the Deck versus Toledo.
I don't see why the injury is denial of accessibility. And denial of accessibility occurs whenever the construction is complete and access is still denied. And everybody, and at that point, the injury has occurred to every impaired person who no longer has accessibility because of that construction. That's the injury right there. And so I don't know why you have to concede that the injury occurs later.
Well, but I listened, Judge Jolly, and specifically you talked about the construction. And that ends up coming back to the problem that we have here, that we don't have alleged dates of construction. And that was important in the Deck case. That was important in the DIA, in the Third Circuit's opinion, in the DIA case, the Disabled in Action case. And the date of construction ends up being important because that is what the plaintiffs here are complaining about. Now, they're complaining that these particular facilities, sidewalks and curb ramps, parking lots, even where the buttons are located on the poles to be able to push the button to say, walk, don't walk across, or and the elevation of those specifics that are set forth in the technical regulations are what they're complaining about. But they're complaining about them in a vacuum. And they're trying to impose technical regulations on the city without alleging when that duty arose. The duty arose when those items were either constructed or when they were altered. And we don't have allegations about when that occurred. What we have are general allegations about anything that occurred after 1992. And I submit that that's insufficient under Title II. I submit that that's insufficient under the statute of limitations jurisprudence in this circuit.
Well, counsel, Judge Jolly's statement or question takes a position or offers a position on how to judge the statute of limitation. It seems to me when you look at Title II, it is talking about when a particular person has suffered an act of discrimination, not when an act of discrimination or an improper act by the city has occurred. And as of that time, there is a violation. And somebody at that time could bring a suit. But Title II is written in terms, it seems to me, of when a particular person has suffered an act of discrimination. And I think it is right not to think of it in terms of standing, because I think it is one way to argue it, certainly in the way at least one court has looked at this, and we need to decide whether anybody's got it right yet or not, or to choose among them, that when this particular set of plaintiffs encountered, regardless of when construction occurs, so long as it was post-92, that's when the act of discrimination against that person occurred. And your answer to that, I think, is that the act of discrimination is fully performed at the time that the construction is done. Is that the distinction?
That's our position.
Depends on what the injury is, doesn't it?
Well,
the injury is denial of accessibility. And, how is a handicapped person injured by the fact that he can't get up on a curb? It's lack of access.
It's lack of access to the program, activity, or service. For example, in paragraph 50 of plaintiff's complaint, Plaintiff Frame talks about being able to go to a particular community center to be able to vote. Voting is an activity or service provided by the government. He complains, nonetheless, in paragraph 50, that the parking lot was improperly signed and lined. You know, the paints on the pavement were improper. But he still was able to vote. He wasn't denied access to it. And so what we have to focus on, I believe, is what is the specific program, activity, or service that we're talking about? And the plaintiff's case is saying that sidewalks are the program. Well, if they do say that, they haven't alleged that the whole system of sidewalks are bad in Arlington. They haven't alleged all the thousands of miles of sidewalks are inaccessible or unavailable to them. They've alleged only specific ones that don't comply with technical regulations. And I believe that I understand what Judge Southwick's question is coming to, but it still has to comport with traditional notions of the jurisprudence in federal courts.
From an economic point of view, wouldn't the city prefer they just pick and choose certain ones that they're complaining about and not the whole city? That would cost you quite a bit, too.
Well, in fact, there is a defense available in that regard, Judge Prado, because if it is impractical, if we get, you know, if there's a view of the entire system, then public entities are protected under the statute by the cost factor, if you will, the economics of it. But that isn't what we have here. We have not a class action case, but we have specific plaintiffs complaining about specific locations that don't comply with technical regulations. But they didn't say when those facilities were constructed or altered to trigger the city's duty. Because they didn't, I submit that the district court was correct in ruling that the statute of limitations was not met, just on the face of the complaint, and that, therefore, this court should affirm the district court's decision. The other grounds that we have asserted in our brief, I'll leave to our brief regarding the other issues that were not briefed by the plaintiffs in this case, frankly, the district court didn't address them either, but they were a part of our motion below. And that concludes my argument. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Voss. Mr. Dello?
I would like to begin at Judge Jolly's point, which is when does the injury occur? Is it completed at the time of construction? If I could point out that Mr. Pike, who is one of our plaintiffs, was not even disabled until the limitations period began. He was disabled within 2 years. He was in a car accident that left him a quadriplegic.
That's not what your problem is, it seems to me, I mean, and why this is a very difficult case for everybody, is you've got, say, 10,000 disabled people whose disabilities occur at different times, whose disabilities are different, and who the construction of the particular curb to satisfy one group of disabled people may not satisfy another disabled group. And so you have 10,000 statutes of limitations out there running around, and you have to make some kind of sense about when have disabled people generally, because that's whom you're representing. You're not really representing individual, you may have individual plaintiffs, but you're representing disabilities as a group. When did the disabled people, when were they denied access to a facility or service of the city? And that seems to me that the most convenient way to say is when they were denied access, whenever the construction was completed, and there was no access.
Judge, respectfully. Okay. There are not that many kinds of curb cuts. The Department of Justice is very specific on what needs to be done on these. There's only one kind of curb cut. It needs to have a certain slope, and the DOJ has very specific regulations.
Yeah, but again, what if I'm a lawyer out there and I have a different kind of client who that general curb cut does not satisfy? And then that person has suffered, under your theory, that person has suffered an injury. And from what you have told me, you would have the right to have an injunction to have that curb adjusted to satisfy that disability.
There is no such thing as adjusting the curb cut. Their DOJ says exactly how the curb cuts must be and what slope they must have.
And that's why there's no private right of action.
No, the private cause
of
action.
The DOJ says.
No, the DOJ just sets the standards, and there are literally thousands of young men and women who are becoming disabled in Iraq and in Afghanistan who will come to Arlington, and Arlington will tell them, well, you know what? Too bad. When you left, we had already built it. You sacrificed, and
well,
we will not
this,
fix
this. This is not a jury. This is not a jury.
Fair enough. If I could make one point about the dates. Mr. Voss keeps saying that our complaint doesn't have dates. Yes, it does, and it is not our burden in the complaint it is an affirmative defense. It is his burden to show at this stage of the pleadings that the pleadings establish for a fact that the statute of limitations has been violated. Our pleadings did not do that. We did not give him the smoking gun to shoot us with. It is enough in there that it says it happened within 2 years in these, I believe there were four of them. It does not say in paragraph 13 generally. We listed specific streets that have been altered within 2 years and then a slew of others that have been altered within the last 3 years, and it is their burden at this stage, and you should let it at least go to summary judgment so we can show exactly when these streets were altered.
Now, could another group of disabled people bring a lawsuit in a different neighborhood of Arlington a year down the road when they realize there's some violations in their neighborhood, and someone else 5 years down the road and someone else 10 years down the road as they discover these particular locations that are not in compliance?
Realistically, that could be the way it happens. Generally, the way it works out with every municipality I've been involved with, we just fix them all now. They come up with a plan. 5, 10 years down the road, all of the problem sidewalks that should have been fixed originally will be fixed. And that's why the DOJ encourages them to have a transition plan. And when they're not doing it, when they're not fixing it, then we have the right to bring, or my clients have the right to bring a private cause of action to force them to do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dow. We will call the next case of the day.